Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello, Ivy Podcast listeners. I am your host, Angela Alberti. Very excited to sit down and interview Matt with Align Executive Search. You know, I have the privilege and opportunity to speak with so many people within the talent and human capital space. That has certainly been where I have found stride in a lot of the different episodes that I do, and certainly the case in today's episode as well. Matt, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. What do you want to know?
Yeah. So give us a little bit of background and on your career timeline and where you are at this point.
Okay. That works. I can start with present. So Align Executive Search just this last December celebrated 8 years in business.
Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know, we have a team of about 15, 10 of which are sales individuals. And then I have some operational people that are helping us behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Our primary focus is healthcare. We also have divisions in engineering, technology, accounting and finance, and then manufacturing as well. That's one of our newer staffing arenas that we've just entered within the last year. Previous to Align Executive Search, I was with a partnership for close to a decade. Their focus was primarily healthcare. They taught me a lot in being a real recruiter, a real headhunter, and so I'm sure we'll dive into that later in the segment. But I've been in staffing altogether for roughly 22 years, from staffing, headhunting, marketing. And so that's been the majority of my career.
Awesome. So I'm sure that you have seen a lot of things take place in the last 20 plus years. We'll get into some of that later. I am curious to know, because, you know, 8 years as a business owner, like I said, congratulations, but 8 years as a business owner in this industry is certainly an added feat. We look at, you know, I read a statistic last year, 70% of startups within the staffing and recruiting industry fail. So I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that, but more so than that, what was that moment for you that you decided to found this company and start, you know, Align Executive Search?
You know, there's so many different parts that come into play. Of course, I'm aware of the success rates of new businesses, succeeding or failing. And we've definitely had our successes and failures in the last year, the last 8 years, excuse me. And, part of what's kept us afloat is good partnerships. You know, we're 100% debt free. We've never missed a payroll. We pay our commissions. We honor our agreements. And even with the best intentions, without a good partnership and financial backing, we might not have been able to do that at certain times. And so it's really about having that secure financial backing and understanding. And being with people that understand the ebbs and flows of business. And so I've had amazing support in being able to keep Align Executive Search afloat. And I think the other part of it is just really doing the work. I thought for a moment that being a business owner, I might be able to work a little less, and that's not the case at all. So if you're thinking about going into business, imagine your hardest day and then, you know, imagine double that, because that's really what it is. And it's super rewarding to build something for yourself, but it is indeed a lot of hard work. It was very humbling to speak with some mentors after about a year of being in business And then to hear what they're doing after 30, 40 years in business, they're still working very, very hard. And so what motivated me to branch out was, one, the opportunity was presented to me by one of my business partners who had been a client previous to us going into business together. But two, it was just about that next natural progression in my career. I spent, as I mentioned earlier, close to a decade with a previous partnership. I had gotten to a C-level capacity. And for me, it was just the next natural progression to growth. And that's what I really wanted to do. I wanted to grow. I wanted to take a shot at, you know, being a business owner and learning so much. You know, previous to business owner, I was a top sales guy with a fancy title. Being a business owner, you're the CEO, the CFO, the COO, the president, the vice president, the recruiter, the account manager, the accountant, and so
the firefighter.
Everything in customer service, HR. And so you learn a ton. And so what I've learned in these last 8 years is just so many different avenues of what it takes to run a business and to also understand and appreciate all the intricate parts that there are in navigating a successful business. And so I can really appreciate and respect each part of what everyone does, especially when you're having to do it all. So,
wow. Very wise words. I think that you've given some awesome advice to our listeners, you know, and I really appreciate one thing, and that's how transparent you were. There were ebbs and flows to this. There were ups and downs to these past 8 years, and where you guys have gotten at this point, you guys have a good amount on your staff, and I'm sure that y'all have grown. You are in these different industries now. Can you tell us a little bit about what that experience has been like to be in healthcare all the way through manufacturing, and how y'all have had to prepare to be able to build that candidate base and really understand the nuances that's associated with many of the different industries that y'all service?
It's interesting, you know, when you talk with different executives, what you learn is that with us dealing with human capital, whether it's our staff or our teams, clients or candidates, it's a lot of the same issues, you know, regardless of the industry, a lot of the same challenges, a lot of the same rewards. And so what I've learned is, you know, basically dealing with human beings, you know, on a personal level, on a professional level, with dignity and respect. And, you know, the art of recruitment, it doesn't really matter what field you're in. I mean, I think it's nice when I'm in a certain facet, let's say of healthcare, and I'm speaking with a healthcare executive, whether it be on the client or the candidate side, it's nice to know the different verbiage and buzzwords to really align yourself in conversation with that person. It's a level, I think, of trust and respect when you can talk the same lingo. But what people really appreciate more than that is the human aspect to the business. And so if I'm recruiting on a manufacturing order, let's say, which I don't know a ton about yet, though I'm learning, what I found with human capital is that when you take a humble approach and you really show a curiosity to what the client is needing or what the candidate's doing on a daily basis, it's very well received. People are happy to teach you about what they're needing or what they're doing on a daily basis. And so when you're collecting that data, one of the slogans I say, I'm sure I've taken it from someone wiser than me, is that in recruitment, you're in the information gathering business. The person with the most information in the most organized fashion that can recall it the quickest is going to win, you know, putting wow. together those facts. And so having said that, it's been very easy to tap into these different industries with a sincere curiosity, an ability to take note and recall, and then make the match accordingly. And if we don't know something, we simply ask and we learn. And so I think there's a lot of trust in that versus the Mr. Mrs. think they know it all, mm-hmm. or try to come off as being very well-versed. So I'm very quick to admit when I'm out of my comfort zone or I don't know something. And I think people in turn respect that.
I would agree 100%, as opposed to the Google University graduate that thinks that they know the industry in and out because of a search. So much humility in your answer, spoken like a true leader, I would say. Thank you for that. Now, can you give us a little bit of insight on what the last couple of years were with the pandemic and how that affected your business, but more so the industry of healthcare that you guys are servicing as well?
Sure. You know, the demand went up. So in healthcare, there's always a demand. And of course, there were challenges. But what we found, and we had one of our best years as well, and what we found the largest challenge being is acknowledging that, yes, we're in a state of emergency. This is a big deal. And clients and candidates really don't have the time, and they never have, but especially now, to sit there and allow us to occupy 20 minutes to a half hour when everyone is in a state of emergency. And even with the most respect and understanding to what the pandemic brought to our industries, we could never fully understand it unless we were on that floor dealing with those residents and patients and staff. And mm-hmm. so there was a part of being as sensitive as we could be, but also a part of educating and counseling and being creative. And so when a hiring decision maker didn't have the time during the day, we would encourage evenings, mornings, and weekends, because we still needed to get staff into the building to care for the residents and patients. And so it would have been a situation oftentimes where if I take away time from the floor to talk with you, I'm neglecting the patients in a very sensitive time, a state of emergency. But I'm damned if I do and I'm damned if I don't. And so we just had to help people see through the weeds in order to get the mission accomplished while being sensitive to their needs. And so when I was getting the different rebuttals from the team that, oh, we can't confirm an interview or we can't close a deal, I'd really have to listen to the challenges and then advise unselfishly, seeing through the weeds again to get us to that desired outcome. The client needs staff. The staff needs a healthy opportunity that's supportive of the state of emergency. And so we're still trying to find people better quality environments, even in an environment that's very hectic. And so it's just a matter of seeing people through the end zone by good listening skills and being able to advise unselfishly.
Wow. Wow. That's been super critical, I'm sure, to what you guys are doing. And certainly acutely aware of the sensitivity behind the type of people. I think that there's something sacred in what we do in the recruiting industry. And in this case, it's not just the person's livelihood with a job in your hands. It was the patient, the resident, the person at the hospital that was needing help. And then how does that extend to their family members? And certainly this chain reaction that you guys really evolved into. One of the things that I thought was fascinating in our prep call was, you know, your general thoughts on what is the great resignation. So anyone that is a part of this industry knows that, you know, we're looking at an average of 3.5% of what is the workforce resigning from their positions every single month on average in this country. And not only that, as a cause of the pandemic or since the pandemic, we see this rise of solopreneurs and people filing for their own EINs and forming business entities, as I think coined the solopreneur. So what is your thoughts around that current segment of the market retention strategy that companies are going to have to align to in consideration of the great resignation?
Well, you know, a couple of things come to mind. Now, mind you, I'm not 100% fully versed on the topic. So I'll share in my own, you know, small contribution, if you will, for what I do know. One, I think that it sounds like an amazing time of opportunity. You know, what a neat opportunity for someone that might have been working at a wage where they can barely support a family, right, to all of a sudden being inspired to open up their own business and do something that they have a passion for. Tony Robbins talks about there's two motivating factors in life, pain and pleasure, right? Mm-hmm. And so when everything's going well, rarely do people wake up and say, hey, you know what? Everything's going very well. I'm comfortable. I'm going to go ahead and shake it up, mess it up, and make myself uncomfortable. And so, you know, it's about time as human beings, we all take it up a notch and say, you know what? $10 an hour isn't enough. I'm not happy with the status quo. Let me go ahead, put on my thinking cap, and work a little harder to aim for my dreams. Finally, wow. That's what it's taken. It's taken a state of emergency to get us motivated as human beings to have a little more initiative and horsepower in our day-to-day actions. So it's about time, you know, from a generally speaking human perspective, that we got our rear ends in gear, right?
Right.
For us, you know, there's
gosh, people, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, come on. You know, I think in America, we're very entitled. We have been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, we have a lot of luxuries, I know I do, that I'm not super thankful for or mindful of because I grew up with those luxuries, you know? But I know there's articles out there that say something along the lines of, if you have a couple of changes of clothes and, you know, just to put it into perspective, $20 in your bank account, you're richer than X percent of the people in the world. And of course, in America, we don't think in those terms because we are indeed so fortunate. My genre is different. You know, I grew up with leadership that was militant top down. The newer genres are more the poetic leadership and room for creativity. And so I'm right at that age where I can appreciate what the junior class people are doing in their ways of creativity, maybe working a little less harder and having more. But I'm also very thankful to the top-down management approach of, you do it because I asked you to, because I'm your boss. You know, I grew up with that certain level of respect. And so I can kind of see both sides of it.
Right.
And sure, I'd like to make a little more money and work less hard. But I've been brought up differently. And so part of this great resignation, if you're in the position to resign, and in doing so, you're not collecting unemployment, I think it's wonderful that you go ahead and go out and get your own EIN number and do your thing. But there's also some people, some vendors that I've chosen not to use anymore, just for my own personal needs, that had this mentality of, well, hey, I'm not going to work on the books. I'm going to collect unemployment, and I'm also going to build something on the side. And I have mixed feelings about that. You know, I don't want to judge a person until I'm in their shoes. Some people have to do what they have to do. But I think that at a certain point, we have to consider what we're doing. And so I think that when people are resigning and they're refusing to work and they're not bringing in any other income, I don't know if that's the best strategy, you know.
Right.
And, you know, as an employer, I'll use this as a personal example. We have a lady that's on salary, and California changed its law to where, as though if a person's on salary, they have to come up to a certain amount or they have to take them to an hourly rate. And so here I am. As an employer, this person has a ton of flexibility to work from home. They're a single mom. And I'm thinking, boy, at that salary, it really doesn't justify all the liberties that, you know, this person's probably working 30 hours a week, maybe 40. And that's kind of the luxury of salary. Sometimes we work more, sometimes we work less. But the increase in California is close to $60,000 a year. And so I kind of paused and I thought about that. I said, you know, yeah, I could put this person at hourly, justifiably so, and I'm sure that they would be fine with it. They were due for an increase any way. And I'm the kind of employer that you don't have to ask me for a raise. I give raises with consideration to inflation. And of course, I honor performance and merit. But I was thinking, you know, here we have a single mom. She's dedicated to the job 100%. This raise would probably mean a whole lot to her. And then I started thinking about how 20 years ago, I was making even more than that as a single individual. And so you start to wonder, like, how are people doing it? Even at these increases, you know, how does a single mom do what they're doing and also position themselves to buy a home or save money or contribute to their 401k and max it out? Like, a lot of people can't do that at the rates that they're being paid. So I'm really torn on the subject just because I can really see it both ways. If I was a far leftist or right, you know, I might have a more straight answer for you on the topic, but I really do, to the best of my ability, I think I can see both sides of it and have compassion either way.
Yeah, and I appreciate you lending us through the lens of an empathetic leader as well, because I do understand the dichotomy of what you are experiencing as somebody who is an entrepreneur myself. So thank you for sharing some of your thoughts around that. Now, when it comes to, you know, speaking on whatever's happening in this influx of people resigning, we know that it's going to affect simply the supply issues that we're having when it comes to talent. There is not enough talent out there for the demand. Maybe this is part of it, maybe it's not. I certainly think that it certainly lends to some of it. But when it comes to the current talent market, how are you guys, because I honestly feel that with staffing and recruiting, it is a listening role, but it's also a consultative role. How are you guys speaking to your clients and knowing how to navigate these waters of the supply and demand talent market?
Sure. So it's always been a candidate-driven market, right? And when you're talking about capturing talent, I think about it in two capacities. I think about it for me, trying to build a team to provide services to my end users. And then I think about my clients. And so my clients, they're not seeing, generally speaking, I think my clients have always felt like, wow, this is a real candidate-driven market. And so it's not a shock to them what they're going through. It's just been an increase, right?
Right.
There's a lot of coaching involved on how you treat an active candidate versus a passive candidate. Time is of the essence. It always has been. Putting our best foot forward, showing value, not just from throwing money on something, but, you know, really selling the opportunity. It's the team's personality, the atmosphere. What's the long game look like being a part of your organization? Even of most recent, and this has affected us, so it's relevant, of most recent, we'll script out an opportunity with our client in order to capture a candidate's interest. I haven't done this until just recent years, where I'm actually sharing with my client what my script says based upon the intel or the narrative that they provided me. And I ask them, have I included everything? Am I missing something? What can you add to this? Because the bottom line is this, with there being an influx of demand for good people, for good human capital, there has to be an influx of what we can offer. And again, it can't be just money, you know, because everybody's one-upping somebody when it comes to money. So it has to be a lot more than that. And so we're taking a deeper dive into benefits, pension, retirement programs, paid time off. You know, what are these? There's more of an emphasis on that. And also really validating what we're pitching. So nowadays, when we're pitching a bonus program, it's not just the potential of X, it's how long has the program been in place? What's the history of the payouts? What is it based on? And so I think what it's allowed us all to do is really a better checks and balances of facts and validating those facts and really coming at a person with a lot more historical data and sincerity. So it's allowed us to kind of turn up the craftsmanship in a quality way in our pitches.
That's awesome. That is some great tips that I think certainly, you know, you have shared have helped you. Now, one of the things that, you know, is interesting is what people talk about when it comes to the future of work. In my opinion, the future work is really revolved around the worker, and knowing that we are in a very much technology obsessed environment, there's never been an easier time than there is now for a potential form of talent to go online and find a plethora of opportunities to fulfill work than there has been at this moment in time. How does your team really separate yourself from all the noise when it comes to technology and really building, you know, a candidate base and building that relationship with the talent when there are so many distractions out there for them?
You get back to the basics. You know, that's what we're doing. We're having more meaningful conversations with people. I'm inundated daily with emails and with LinkedIn in messages. And
right.
Even if I had all the time in the world, a lot of them don't really spark interest, you know. But when my phone rings, it's my responsibility to pick up that phone. As a business owner, as a leader, I have to be here for my people and for all of my end users. And so every once in a while, a lucky salesperson will get my ear because I pick up the phone. And if they're good in their pitch, and if it happens to be a service or product that I happen to need, well, I listen to them. Part of that, too, is just for good karma. I'm hoping if I'm nice to them, then the next cold call I do, they'll be nice to me, right? Hard to be mean there or impatient or rude. But, you know, one of our secret recipes, and I don't mind sharing this with people. I realize there's competitors out there, and that's okay. But getting back to the art of communicating with people, you know, you don't develop relationships, personal or professional, in a text or an email, not meaningful ones, not long-lasting, sustainable ones. And so I got a client on the phone yesterday. He owes us money. He's owed us money for a long time. He's been paying all increments, but we talk. And, you know, without him asking, I redeveloped a contract at a lesser rate with better pay clauses to better meet his needs. And in doing so, I pulled down two new orders with him. So it's two pieces of business we wouldn't have had. He's kept his word, even though initially he couldn't, and it wasn't his fault. It was the people that he had hired. It was the management company. And so the point being, I couldn't navigate through a potential loss and make it a win-win for him and for I without the art of communication. And so I feel like in recruitment, especially when we're being paid by a client, entrusted by a candidate with one of the most important items in their life, their career, the one item that probably occupies more time than even family, I want my end users to know that I'm there for them and that I'm listening to them and that I'm making those matches accordingly. And so, you know, my hope is that as the demands grow, that we'll turn up the heat on and the effort on just the art of good old-fashioned communication.
Mm-hmm. So true. It's tying the human element to human capital. I think I've said that before, but it's very true. It's something that, you know, as sexy as AI can be and automation can be, what happened to the relationship, you know, that we cannot develop if we weren't on a Zoom right now, or over the phone. So I love what you guys are doing and really just keeping it back to what is truly basic in our own human nature, and that's developing that relationship. Anything that you would recommend, and maybe this is me selfishly asking for some advice, as you know, I'm a co-founder of My Base Pay, which is a business outside of this, but what do you recommend for that entrepreneur in the first 2 years of business? that they're looking to develop and launch themselves into?
Well, I'll say one thing just to close the loop on the A&I. The A&I, we use a lot of that, but to us, that's an ottoman. It's just a tool that increases human connection. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, I think, want to take A&I and replace it with human connection. And so A&I for our team, it just increases the odds of the direct connect. But what we teach is that there still should be the same amount of conversation and rapport as there was 20 plus years ago when I first got into the game. You know?
Or perhaps even more now, because a lot of that, you know, that administrative stuff that takes up and consumes a lot of time can be enhanced.
A&I is not going to tell you about the candidate's significant other considering taking an opportunity in another state that'll jeopardize your deal or your client being able to capture that talent. The art of communication, trust, and rapport will. And I can't ask those questions legally per se, depending on what state I'm working in. But the candidate can volunteer that information to me because they know me and they trust me and they care about the outcome. Mm-hmm. And so that's the part that A&I probably won't, at least not in my lifetime, tap into. Getting to your question about, if I'm hearing you correctly, Angela, is it, hey, what do I need to do in my first 2 years if I'm launching something to be successful? Is that the gist of the question?
Sure.
I think for me, I had to be an example of the craft. And so my longtime partners, there's nothing they're currently doing today that they haven't seen me do and do very well myself. And so I had to be a leader by example. I had to be the consistent, one of the hardest workers in the room. And I had to do that consistently. Just the other day, yesterday, I was apologizing to one of my partners. He's a director of training. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry. I haven't been here the last couple of days, like the whole day. One day I had to cut out early because a delivery service brought something 3 hours earlier than it should have. And if I didn't. And so I don't need to tell him that. He's not even looking for that. But really being here every day, being a part of the team, being a worker amongst workers. And that's how I motivate my team. Now, I'm of the same belief, too, that a coach should be on the sidelines coaching. They can't be on the team playing. But this isn't the NBA, right? This is an office environment. And so with that, yeah, the coach needs to be right alongside, sleeves rolled up, delegating to the right people as they grow. And so simply answered, I think, as I kind of talk myself through answering your question, be an example of what you want, and you'll get just that in your first 2 years.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's some great advice. One of the things that I'd love to pick your brain on is just before we wrap up today's podcast, what is your idea of remote work? And what are your thoughts behind having a staff of remote work or being able to now locate that person in Idaho because this company is considering expanding their reach? Any thoughts on that in general?
You know, before the pandemic hit, I was very skeptical of people, quote unquote, working from home because we know a lot of the general negatives that come with that. You know, come on, are you really working, blah, blah, blah. But some of my top performers are working from home, you know, and so I think if there's a proven history of success in doing so, I think it can be very I think it could be a great thing, a quality of life, getting to be around family, more convenient. It saves a lot of time rather than being on the road for an hour or two. That could be work that's produced, in a more productive way. Again, raising the quality of life. What about the personal satisfaction of having that convenience? But, you know, I think it's also about having real suitable work environment at home. You know, your desk can't be your bed. You know,
That's
it should
right.
be an office that's set up like an office and that's separate from the home environment, you know, so a dedicated office with real tools and services that allow you to do your job efficiently. I think if you're trying to convince yourself that you're working from home and there's kids running around and you're sitting on the couch with a laptop watching the news, I'm going to argue that you're not going to be able to be as productive versus sitting in a stationary environment focused on your work. So.
Right. Yeah. There is certainly a delicate balance. Anything that you would recommend to companies? Because we all know that with every option, there are pros and cons. And certainly you mentioned one of the cons. It's having that environment that's conducive to actually being able to work. But secondly, how do you maintain that social structure? How do you maintain the value that we once got, you know, preparing coffee in the morning, speaking to your colleague? Have any tips on what you guys have done or have recommended to clients to maintain that cultural fit amongst a remote staff?
I think so one qualifying that they have conducive work resources in order to work from home. And then I think too, encouraging routine, you know, and so for an example, one of the guys that I have working from home, he's a managing partner that spearheads our accounting and finance division. His name's Mike. If I call Mike at any point during the day and he clicks on Zoom or FaceTime, Mike looks like he's at work. He is groomed. He is dressed. If a client needed him to run out the door and take care of something, Mike would be ready, you know. And so I think you really have to develop routine and play the part in order to perform at that optimal level. And that may sound old-fashioned, right? But I think the mindset of what you're about to accomplish or focus on, I think that plays a part in, you know, your posture. And so hopefully that answers the question.
Sure, sure. Absolutely. Now, Matt, what are some of the things that you are staying up to date on that you depend on when it comes to sources of information? What's your content diet and what does that consist of?
Well, you know, staying dialed into being a good leader, following market trends. You know, mm-hmm. I use a lot of the heavy hitters in our recruitment industry. And I take their advice. I have monthly counseling sessions with them. I listen to my people. You know, they're the ears and eyes to what's happening immediately. So I try to switch gears accordingly and research what's being said and kind of filter out what's said in emotion versus what's said that's sustainable. And
right.
So just constantly keeping the ears open. I read a lot of different books that keep me well balanced when it comes to, you know, spiritual, physical, business. So I like to stay tuned in on that. At any given time, I'm reading 3 or 4 books at one time.
What's your top book recommendation?
My top book recommendation. I knew you were going to ask that as I was throwing out there the fact that I was reading all at one time. Here's an oldie but goodie. It's Mastering the Art of Conversation. I'm rereading Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Others. And it's a book that I've read before, but sometimes I'll find myself in a social situation or even a one-on-one situation where I'm acting like I've never heard or read that book in my entire life. And so having just read that book, it helped me to be sensitive the other day to this client that wasn't meeting up on his end of the bargain. And it was kind of funny. He had sent me a text, hey, thank you for your patience and blah, blah, blah. And I responded, I'm like, yeah, you know, it's kind of hard. You know, this is affecting my aging. And the next day I said, hey, thank you for making the commitment of recent with the small payments. I'm sure you must be stressed and you're probably getting a lot of pushback and there's probably some people you aren't paying. So thank you for at least having me on that list. And so just keeping me more mindful and present rather than the fear, the selfishness of, you know, when we're in that state, we're not responding mindful and it's not productive. But when we're in the state to think about what the other person might be going through, it helps us to really get what we want and be more sympathetic to the person that's needing that. So
that's awesome. Awesome. Matt, where can our audience find you and get in contact with you?
Sure. You know, we, our website is alignexec.com. You can find me on LinkedIn, Matt Armand, founder to Align Executive Search. And you can call me 949-313-1441 if you just want to have an old-fashioned conversation. You know, if I can help you in your career or help you build your team or help strategize, I'm happy to do that. I'm here every day, Monday through Friday from 8:30 to 5:30. So
I love how you are holding true to that communication tactic, but keeping it old school, just picking up the phone and establishing that relationship. Thank you, Matt. It's been absolutely wonderful to speak with you. I think you've shared a lot of insight with our team and with our listeners as well. Certainly, I'm walking away learning a lot of new things. So I appreciate you spending some time with us. I appreciate our listeners. Like I always wrap up each podcast, time is a very valuable thing. It's one of the more valuable things that we can give to one another. So I appreciate y'all tuning in and Matt, you sitting down with us and just letting some of your knowledge.
Angela, thank you for the opportunity to do so and best of luck with your venture. And I appreciate you.
Of course. Thanks, guys. We'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.